This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Weigh what's great versus what should be going on offensively.
For me, Kyle Shanahan doesn't have a whole lot to prove as an offensive coach. He obviously is a great coordinator. He's first-time head coach. Still trying to find his way and balance when can I put my coordinator hat on? When do I have to have the head coach hat on? I would rather, coming out of this preseason, I would rather have the defense feeling good and dramatically improved than the offense. I think the offense is going to be fine. I think they've got enough weapons. If Jimmy G stays healthy, they'll be fine. The defense, they were bad last year, and they're trying to tell us they weren't as bad as we think, especially as it applies to the secondary. I would much rather that if somebody's going to have to take a hit so that the other unit can get confident, I would rather the offense took the hit and you have a confident defense moving forward.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. John Dickinson, Michael Urban here on a Sunday on 95.7 The Game. I think, look, you look at the 49ers defense, and they are expecting a significant upgrade in terms of a pass rush. We've talked about Nick Bosa, who's got to be on the field. We've talked about D4, who hasn't been on the field since the early part of training camp. They are believing that pass rush is going to work in conjunction with some interior defensive linemen that are pretty good. DeForest Buckner.
Yeah.
They feel that there's going to be less on the plate of Arik Armstead and Solomon Thomas, thus making them more productive players, whether they're inside or outside, players that are going to be rotational players that are going to play both.
This is it for them, right? Those two guys.
This is it for Armstead for sure.
Yeah.
I think Thomas, because he's a year removed, you know, Thomas came in a year later, so I think Thomas may have one more year of figure it out. They like both those guys a lot.
I know they do, and they just haven't done much.
No, they haven't. But there's a belief that they're going to be asked to do less, and that's going to lead to improved production. You're going to see more because they're being asked to do less.
Right.
That's the one
makes sense
sentence.
It's logical anyway.
That's the one sentence. If you're watching
those
two guys
pitch
this year, that's the pitch.
Right.
Look, Fred Warner looks really good. Quan Alexander, they paid a lot of money to come over and fly around and run sideline to sideline and make plays.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems healthy, which is good for all the guys that, you know, everybody's worried about Garoppolo and McKinnon hasn't been on the field and they've had other injuries pop up. Quan Alexander, coming off an ACL himself, he looks like he's in good shape.
Yeah.
And so that's maybe the linebackers are a little bit better than you would have thought coming into the year, if he can play. And Richard Sherman looks really good. Richard Sherman looks really good.
He's going to have a great year because he didn't have to spend the whole offseason rehabbing. It was a regular offseason for him.
Yeah, he's looked really good. And then it becomes a matter of who's the starting corner on the other side. Is it Akella Witherspoon? Akella Witherspoon's been up and down. But they're hoping that the pass rush really enhances the play of the secondary,
right.
And then you've got Jaquaski Tartt, and you've got right now Tarvarius Moore, who we said was, you know, again, he was a corner that he was a safety that they moved to corner that is now back at safety.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make sure I get that order right. And he's playing for Jimmy Ward.
I would like to see the Niners establish a defensive identity early. And when Dante Whitner was on the team, that was a team that the other team feared because they had dudes on the Niners defense that would just lay wood. I mean, they would love to light you up. And how many big hits do you remember last year for the Niners? There weren't that many. It didn't seem like their defense intimidated in any way. I think they have the makings of an intimidated defense now.
It looks that way. And that's not something that I would have believed to be true coming into this camp. Like, you go in with a blank slate and you just kind of wonder what's it going to look like. And all indications are that this team could have a pretty good defense, which actually, even with Bosa and Dee Ford in the mix, and those guys haven't been out there a lot, I found that surprising.
Right.
Now, does that translate to the regular season? Well, we're going to find out, because they're going to go up against one of the best offensive coaches in football, week one, in Bruce Arians.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they are going to go up, and Bruce Arians is going to throw deep, and Bruce Arians is going to line up and try and maul you. And does he have the talent to do that? Remains to be seen.
Right.
But Bruce Arians doesn't, like, you know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. And look, until further notice, I'm picking on whatever side of the field that Sherman is.
Yeah, you're
not
going.
On,
you're going at Akello.
Yeah, I'm going after him until he proves that he can stop me.
You're going in the slot. K'Wan Williams, a good slot cornerback. He's been out. I mean, so they're going to be looking to pick those guys apart. Let's sneak in Aaron in San Francisco here on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on. I love y'all, man. Hey, for me, it's not about the pass rush with the Niners. And I'll be up front, I'm a Cowboy fan, but I respect the Niners. It's hard-nosed defense, but it starts with the secondary. It's not the pass rush. If teams know that they can throw the ball on the Niners, the pass rush becomes irrelevant, because now we're talking play action, swing out to the scat back left and right, and quick get off to get off the ball. So it's not about them even being like, you can't throw the ball on the Niners. They just have to be efficient and take away stuff and let that pass rush be effective. If Roger Sherman can tighten up that secondary unit and lead it, and there's a lot of heart there. You know, I was watching in the past, man, and Merton Hanks used to just really show out and pump up that defense, and they would respond to that. Reed, he'd pump them up, and they would respond to that. They had that leader. Can Sherman be that leader? I think so. I think the key is in the secondary. They don't have to kill it. They just have to shut it down and let the pass rush do its job.
Thanks for the call, Aaron. Appreciate it.
Passionate.
It's an optimist view.
August 18th, everybody. It's August 18th.
But, hey, we're now less than 3 weeks away from a full slate of morning games.
It can't come soon enough, really. I mean, I'm done with the preseason already. There's only been... haven't even finished week two of the preseason. I'm already done with it.
John Dickinson, Michael Urban, Dalton Johnson coming up here momentarily in 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Michael Urban, with you here on a Sunday until noon. Shuffling some guests around, Herbs. We're going to have Robert Mays of The Ringer. He's going to join us coming up at about 10:50. He had a little flight issue, so we'll talk some football with him. But right now, it's a pleasure to be joined by Dalton Johnson of NBC Sports Bay Area, NBC Sports Bay Area .com. You can check out his stuff there. Dalton, thanks a lot for coming on. You're on with JD and Herbs. We appreciate the time. And I'll just open the question, the segment this way. How do you view the Giants? Because I'm having a hard time viewing them as a team in a pennant race. For me, it's more, they're a team that's done a lot with not much, and it's kind of intriguing and fun to watch, but it doesn't really strike me as a playoff team either.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's kind of safe to say that the Giants have maybe been the biggest mystery this whole season of all teams in baseball, you know, and I think adding someone like a Logan Webb, who kind of impressed last night, even adds to that mystery of what's this team going to be, and then you have a possible Johnny Cueto coming back, you know, and then you have someone like Mike Yastrzemski, who might hit 20 home runs, so, you know, I think they're just a sneaky team where, you know, Farhan's been making these different moves that really could push them to the playoffs, and you have a Bruce Bochy. So it's a team that you really never know. you know, if you're going to put some money on this, I'd probably play it safe and, you know, maybe keep it in your wallet. But this team really, you kind of just never know with this group of guys.
Hey, Dalton, we were kicking this question around a little bit earlier, too. Like, what is the Giants' identity? Not so much as it relates to the pennant race, but just what are their defining characteristics as a team? And I don't know that that has necessarily been formed either with all the constant shuffle.
Very true. I think, you know, I think with Farhan, it has kind of been a, you know, a little bit of a pin the tail on the donkey as far as guys having all these different kind of options, you know, and it's just a rotating wheel, right? So they're... That's been kind of the hard thing, is kind of finding this identity. And I think that more than anything, though, I think that they've been going off of Bruce Bochy's identity lately. And I do think that with his last season, that it is part of, you know, a little bit of something to rally around for sure. And there's been certain games somewhat lately or even in the past month where he's been playing them like a playoff game. So I think that we're seeing a Bruce Bochy identity for sure, just trying to find ways to win, you know, and whether it's been a month straight where they're the hottest team in baseball because of the bullpen or not, or finding guys like a Yastrzemski, like I already brought up, that kind of surprises you. So is there a pure identity? I would say no, but I think that they are really kind of working around Bruce Bochy and trying to still fight for the playoffs.
Do Mike Yastrzemski and Alex Dickerson in particular strike you as answers to questions for 2020, or is it too early to say that for either or both?
I'd say it's still too early, but I'd say Yastrzemski more than Dickerson. I think obviously Dickerson caught our eye so quickly because of the power and him being on fire so much, but unfortunately his body has just kind of let him down. And that's been the story of his whole career. The guy's always had potential from the time that he was a prospect and on. But whether it's his back or having to get a different kind of surgeries, I think he had a Tommy John surgery. But, I mean, I think, unfortunately, his body just won't let him be the kind of player that he is. So I don't think that he could be a long-term answer. I think Yastrzemski might be the real deal, though. I mean, is he going to be someone that – is this hot all the time and is going to turn into a 25 home run guy? I don't know. That's very hard to say. I mean, he's what, a 28 year old rookie. So, I mean, that's obviously hard to say, but I mean, the swing is just, it's a smooth swing. If you look at his spray chart, his home run chart, he has power to both gaps. He can pull the ball. He can hit balls out of the yard down the left field line. And he's obviously not a huge guy, but I mean, he's a solid athlete that has power to all fields. So I think he's someone that can we pencil him in as the opening day left fielder? No, as we've learned with Farhan Zaidi, nothing is guaranteed. But I think he's definitely someone that could possibly be an answer.
Dalton Johnson, our guest here on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, Dalton, Bruce Bochy, when asked to kind of pinpoint when things started to turn for him, he didn't give Dickerson all the credit, but he sure did go out of his way to make sure everybody knew that he deserved quite a bit of credit for it to be such a young guy and to have this veteran manager, Hall of Fame manager, in his swan song to be talking about him. That's got to be a nice little – I mean, anybody who's looking for the Giants' future, and this season is about identifying pieces for the future, it seemed like Bruce Bochy wants to stand on the mountaintop and say, this dude is part of your future. Don't forget it. Don't blow it.
No, very true. I think it's huge, and I think the biggest thing with Dickerson, too, is it brought energy. You know, I mean, it brought energy to the dugout, and I think that for a long time at the beginning of the year, we talked so much about, you know, kind of almost labeling the Giants as a boring team, you know, and I think someone like an Alex Dickerson sparked them. It was a new guy that this guy's on fire, you know, and you have the chant in the dugout that I probably can't say on radio right now. But, you know, I mean, the teammates are rallying around him. The fans are rallying around him. The people in those left field bleachers are rallying around him. So I think more than anything, it was an energizer, you know. And I think, it, you know, if his body does allow him, the guy has just pure raw power. So I think that would be great to find a spot for him and maybe have him be one of those answers to left field, because we've seen for so long that there just hasn't been an answer in left field literally since Barry Bonds. But I think more than anything, he was an energizer, and the Giants and every team need that, whether it's a Hunter Pence, it's a Stephen Vogt, it's an Alex Dickerson, someone that other players can rally around and want to lift up for sure.
What five pitchers give the Giants their best September rotation to continue to compete and contend and hang in the race?
Well, number five is the biggest question, right? I mean, you have your Bumgarner. You have Samardzija, who obviously is up and down, but he has looked great at times. I think that you can get a Johnny Cueto back, and like, let's be optimistic here and say that you do have him for a September stretch. And I think that that fourth one is Logan Webb. I think that he's the most talented of the next tier. I think that we saw after that first inning yesterday when he settled in. He has pure stuff. He has major league stuff already. He's hitting 94 and 95, really worked on his changeup. And like, breaking ball can be filthy at times. But the number five guy, I mean, is it another lefty with Connor Menez? Is it Sean Anderson getting back from the blister? Is it D-Rod? You know, I mean, the last time that we saw D-Rod, he looked great. So that's obviously the biggest question. I think possibly it could be D-Rod because we saw what he did last year. I think maybe going up and down and using the options game with him might have thrown him off of his rhythm. Obviously, he can't use that as an excuse. But possibly it might be D-Rod, and I think that's probably their hope right now, is that they could find the D-Rod from last year and keep him on for the rest of this year and use possibly that five to push down towards a playoff run. Is to be a pretty impressive group, actually.
Dalton, it seems like Kurt Young hasn't gotten any attention for the work that he's done with the Giants staff, but much like he did out in Oakland, he's very adept at working with not just reclamation projects with veterans, but young guys still trying to find their way in the league. What kind of impact has he had, particularly on the youngsters?
Oh, I think a huge impact. I mean, like you said, we've seen his track record, whether it be in Oakland or here. And, I mean, just look at the different guys that he's had to work with this year. I mean, it's just been a rotating group of a staff. And, you know, and there's been guys like a Tyler Beattie that he's trying to keep the confidence in, or you have veterans like Bumgarner that you could obviously lay back with, but trying to sharpen the iron of a Jeff Samardzija, find a new prospect like a Logan Webb, find someone that's kind of come out of nowhere like a Connor Menez. So I think that he deserves a ton of credit. Obviously, the Giants' success in the past years and the World Series years has been built on their pitching, and for Kurt Young to do what he's done this year with so many different arms, I think he deserves a huge amount of credit.
Dalton, how do you see the Madison Bumgarner deal playing out? Is he going to be a Giant in 2020? And how do you see the Giants attempting to sign him, or maybe not attempting to sign him? Obviously they're going to give him the qualifying offer. They're going to put the draft pick compensation on him. Do you feel like there's maybe a window that the Giants could sneak in with other teams maybe being a little skittish that's better than expected, but still enough to get something done?
I think that he could still be a Giant for sure. Don't put that down with Sharpie. Keep it with pencils. You can erase it. But he could be a Giant for the next few, however many years, for sure. I think that it's huge for Farhan Zaidi to see him for a full season and see what Madison Bumgarner still is, and the last few starts, Bumgarner has proved who he still is, and he has looked like an ace. And I think, to be honest, I think that he's proved even me wrong. I think that there's times where I'm like, okay, for a contending team, maybe he's a really good number two, and obviously you want to try to rely on that past October bulldog mentality. But, I mean, there's been times lately where he still looks like a top-notch ace. You know, I think obviously the qualifying offer will be interesting, and it could help the Giants a lot. I think it'll come down to years. You know, obviously he's getting past the wrong side of 30. Now he's 30 years old. The injuries have been more freak injuries than anything else. But I think the Giants will be right there in the mix. And I think that he proved that he wants to be a Giant. You know, I don't think he's obviously not going to turn other teams away. I think he rightfully so should listen to other teams and listen to offers and listen to the money. But I think that he did make it clear around the trade deadline that, look, like, if we're going to go for this and we're going to win, I want to be part of this. And I want to be part of the San Francisco Giants culture. So there's no doubt that he could still be a Giant for however many years to come.
Dalton, thanks a lot, man. We really appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Dalton.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Dalton Johnson joining us here on 95.7 The Games. Man, good insights there.
Yeah.
On what's going on with the San Francisco Giants.
You think Mad Bum signs back?
I don't.
Neither do I.
Yeah, I don't. I think...
You think if Bochy was still managing,
yeah,
he'd sign back?
Maybe.
I think
you'd have a better shot.
Yeah, me too.
I took Bumgarner wanting to... I put it in two different categories. I took Bumgarner's reluctance to leave this year. I don't think that means that he's reluctant to leave, period.
Right.
To me, he wanted... They got rolling, and I think he wanted to have one final...
One last run, yeah.
...run with Posey and Belt and Crawford and Bochy,
yeah,
and those guys that have been around. I just think... He strikes me as a, I don't really want to change my stuff. I don't really want to change it up in the middle of the year.
Right. Yeah.
Guy.
No doubt. And, you know, I think Bruce Bochy is, I mean, he's at the root of all this. I think all those guys in that clubhouse have such respect for Boch. And it's not like you can just flip a switch and go from being a bad team to a decent team. But that appears to be what the Giants have done. And I've got to believe that as the season's gone deeper and deeper, that their resolve to send out Bruce on a high, maybe not a playoff high, but certainly a managing meaningful games late in September high. I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, I don't know. My gut is he really wants the Giants to pay him a ton. And I almost, you know, people sometimes view just his relationship with the Giants under the lens of, well, he's going to give him a hometown discount. I don't think that. I actually think he's more apt to think they owe him more,
yeah,
than another team would because of everything he's done for them and because he took a lesser deal already.
Right.
Is that fair? Is that crazy? Is that...
I don't know. It was his choice to take a lesser deal, right? And to...
Sure.
Punish the Giants, so to speak. Maybe punish is the wrong word.
But you take the lesser deal and you outpitch it.
Right.
And you win, especially the way you won in 2014. And look, I know it's 5 years later.
Yeah.
But I think if I'm Madison Bumgarner, I'm of the belief that the Giants owe me a little more than maybe another team would.
Well, the Giants have a history of paying people for what they've done in the past.
And that's not how they operate anymore, though.
Right. I mean, I hope that they're done with that. I hope they've gotten away with that. But I don't. Bumgarner doesn't strike me as somebody who, I don't think the dollars matter to him. I mean, he's a pretty simple guy. He's said a number of times, I got all the money I'm ever going to need. I don't know that it's, I don't know, it makes him sound a little bit like greedy and like a typical 2019 athlete where it's all about me, but I don't know. I think if Bum feels like this, if at the end of this year he looks around, sees what Farhan Zaidi has started to build and likes the way it's going, I could see him signing back.
Depending on who you talk to, the Patrick Corbin contract is something that,
yeah,
that is on his radar.
Okay.
And, you know, everybody has that guy. Like, just everybody has that guy where you're like, you see somebody in any industry get a job or get paid, and you go, I'm better than that guy.
Right, yeah.
I'm better than that guy. I'm not taking a dime less. Oh, that guy? They want that guy?
Well, who's the knucklehead that gave Patrick Corbin that? I was surprised by that deal.
6 and 140.
I do not see another pitcher getting 6-7 year deals. I mean, that should be a thing of the past. I'd be deathly afraid of giving a pitcher a 6 or 7 year deal.
I'm looking at the numbers right now. 6 and 140 is 23.3 a year average.
Mm-hmm.
If Corbin's 6 and 140, what's Bumgarner?
What's Bum making now?
Is it 12? 11? 12?
And that is how the agents are going to do their work. They're going to look at that Corbin contract, and here's where we're starting, and we all know that Mad Bum's better than Corbin, right? That's going
to
be.
It's not crazy though to look at it that way, right?
No, not at all.
$12 million for Bumgarner, just to this year.
Okay, 925. If you think Bum wouldn't take a hometown discount, you haven't been paying attention for 10 years. Okay. JD and Herbs, Mad Bum should go where the money is, where the most money is. He's given the best hometown discount already.
What does a hometown discount look like?
I don't know.
I don't see him take. He's not going to take 3.75.
Mm-hmm. You don't think so?
No, hell no. I think he might take 4.100.
I think the Giants will offer 4.100.
That's where I think there's a range.
Okay.
$25 million a year.
Yeah. He's worth that. I mean, think about it. If he's probably the only guy on the staff that draws fans that stimulate walk up sales, right?
I might offer him. I wouldn't want to go more than 4 years if I'm the Giants.
Me neither.
But I would pay a little bit more a year as a payback.
They might have to.
So to me, I actually think the $23 million per is low. I think the six. If we're comparing it to the Corbin deal, if we're comparing a Bumgarner deal to the Corbin, a possible Bumgarner deal to the Corbin deal, and
right.
The Corbin deal is 6 and 140, so 23.3 per year. I think the 23.3 per year is low. I think the 6 years is high.
Yes, I still can't believe somebody gave a pitcher a 6 year deal. Mad Bum, you got to think about if you're able to re-sign him. One of the trends in baseball has been, look at the Albert Pujols contract, right? They signed that knowing the last couple of years of that deal are probably going to hurt. He's going to be grossly overpaid. But let's hope that he has a few good years left in him at the front end of the deal.
Sure.
I think that's the way people are going to be looking at pitchers as well. And I think they've started doing that already, which is why you saw, you know, a somewhat tepid free agent market, and it's becoming more and more tepid every year. I mean, free agent market is that whole qualifying offer thing that has screwed up free agency. I mean, I feel bad for the guys that are hitting free agency for the first time last offseason and now, because it's a totally different game because of that qualifying offer.
I almost think it's 4 years and about, I want to say maybe 20, 27, 28 per.
Would you give him 5, 125?
I probably would.
That comes from the 408 on the text line. Thank you.
I probably would.
5, 125.
I probably would. I'm not. I don't know that Farhan would.
How about this?
And you know what? Here's where the. Well, go ahead. And I'm going to jump in with something. But go ahead.
Bumgarner got paid for 2 years where he didn't pay much at all.
Where he didn't
play
yeah,
much
didn't
at
play
all.
Much
so
at all. Yeah. So. Yeah, and those were years where if he had.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe they're a better team.
I get what they're saying, but look, just because the baseball has a great union and all their contracts are guaranteed, you know, nobody should be hurt by that. But he did get paid quite handsomely for 2 years where he didn't do a whole lot. And so maybe would that make him inclined to sign an undermarket value deal?
I'm more along the line of 4-1-12.
What's that? 4-1.
That's 28.
Wow, you're very spendy with other people's money.
Four,
I like it.
4 times 28. So you're giving them a little. You're taking 2 years off, but you're giving them an extra, let's say, $5 million a year compared
right.
to the Corbin deal.
Gotcha. I'd be more comfortable with that.
So $5 million a year extra over the 4 years. You take the 2 years off the
yeah.
back end.
I'm good with that.
I think.
What do you know about Mad Bum changing agents? It's a text line says Mad Bum switched to the legacy agency. I hadn't heard that.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me.
It doesn't surprise me that I have no idea who Mad Bum's agent is. That just everything
that's an even better call.
Right.
That's an even better call because I'm with you on that. I did not know that either.
Yeah.
But I do believe if you were to tell me Madison Bumgarner, I think Madison Bumgarner is more unhappy with the way the money thing played out than we all think.
Really?
I think we're all kind of, you know, I think we live in this world where Bumgarner doesn't care about money and Bumgarner loves being a Giant and Bumgarner, like, I think a lot of that gets played up.
Yeah.
Based on it becomes revisionist history based on the way they won in 14 and the way,
yeah.
like it's never, you saw this a lot with the Warriors too, where the Warriors, they win And the greatness gets played up, you know, like all of the different levels to it gets played up, like it's something that it maybe wasn't,
right,
or to a level that it wasn't. Like, all these guys love each other so much.
You mean stuff gets exaggerated in sports, JD?
Yeah,
say it ain't so.
Or I think a lot of times where it happened with the Warriors is with their bench players. Like the whole strength in numbers thing.
Yeah.
Like that was kind of one of my pet peeves a little bit as time went on. Was the Warriors would win all these games because these star players were doing big things.
Right.
And then there'd be, you know, the five stories about the four bench guys who...
Yeah, but
you know, big three in the second quarter, strength in numbers. Big Quinn Cook three in the second quarter, strength in numbers.
They were strength in numbers at the start of the championship
run. No, they absolutely were.
But they
stopped being strength in numbers when Kevin Durant came.
Right. Then you became strength in superstars
exactly.
Because you couldn't afford to have that deep, versatile bench that you used to have.
Exactly. So you can't have it both ways.
Hey, we just talked to NBA.
We did. And we may
do more of that.
We may do more of that coming up. We actually will do more of that coming up, Herbs. But first, we are scheduled to speak with Robert Mays of The Ringer. We've connected with him, and we'll talk some football with him coming back next here. JD, Herbs, 95.7 The Game.
Now back. 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Michael Urban on a Sunday morning. More of your phone calls coming up here momentarily. Let's get to our next guest, though, Herbs. And it is the one and only Robert Mays, writes for The Ringer, formerly of Grantland. Some great NFL content. Robert joins us now here on 95.7 The Game. Robert, thanks a lot for coming on. We really appreciate the time.
No worries, guys. My pleasure.
Yeah, Robert, explain to us and explain to the listener. A great piece about what teams are doing with their offensive coordinator position, and you've couched it as the Sean McVay experiment. What is the Sean McVay experiment, and how much should we be keeping an eye on it this year across the NFL as a whole?
I mean, I think it's a huge story across the league as a whole, and I think that, you know, there's probably two sides of it. And there's that running joke that if you've ever spoken to Sean McVay, you're a head coaching candidate now. So obviously the coaches on his staff have been in high demand, whether it's Matt LaFleur, who used to be there, or Zach Taylor, both of whom got head coaching jobs. But on a broader perspective, it's essentially teams looking for a young play-calling head coach. So they want their head coach to be their offensive play caller. And, I mean, if you look at around the league what teams are after, you know, we have five head coaches that were hired this offseason that will call their offensive plays. Seven of the 15 first-year play callers were 40 or younger when they got hired. So I think that teams are looking for a specific blueprint, and I can understand that because it seems like there are merits to that model when you consider what the Rams have done. And even if you take it a little broader to see like what Kyle Shanahan has accomplished with Nick Mullins and, you know, Matt Nagy in Chicago. But I also feel like as you really start to chase a trend, we're going to have teams that run into some issues because they don't understand that it's not just about hiring a young guy that understands how a beard trimmer works and can draw some plays up that look pretty cool.
Which of the teams and the individuals do you think are set up the best to succeed, and where do you think maybe you're going to have some guys struggle?
I think it's hard to say. I'd point to LaFleur just because I think Mike Pettine is a very good defensive coordinator. I think they have a lot of talent on both sides of the ball on that team, and he has Aaron Rodgers. So, I mean, I feel like that situation was probably the best one possible, and I think that Freddie Kitchens is in a similar spot. You know, we've seen what he can do with Baker Mayfield. The Browns have arguably the most talented roster in the league, but I think these teams that are starting over a little bit more, that are in more kind of traditional places when you're hiring a head coach, you're a bad roster, you're losing a lot, those are tougher to pin down. You know, if you had told me that Sean McVay would be the most influential figure in the last 2 years in the NFL when he was hired, I would have laughed you out of a room. I just think it's really difficult without knowing these guys intensely to know who's going to succeed and who's going to fail. If you talk to people who know Sean, they always thought he was going to be just an actual protege. I mean, he was going to be just this unbelievable prodigy is what I was looking for. He's going to be this unbelievable prodigy. But for the most part, I think that we're throwing darts when it comes to this stuff.
Do you think Kyle Shanahan is viewed much the same way? I mean, he's obviously fits the bill of what you're talking about, but is he somebody that the outside world thinks as highly of as I'm sorry, I misspoke. The outside world clearly looks at Sean McVay and thinks, wow, this guy is, you know, it's a copycat league. Everyone's going to copy them. But had the Niners had the success and not the Rams, it would have been the same thing, right?
If I could hire one play caller in professional football, it would be Kyle Shanahan. I don't, it's to me, it's he's number one with a bullet. I mean, if you look what he's done with that 49ers offense, when you consider what he's had to work with, I mean, Nick Mullins averaged 8.3 yards per attempt last season. That's ridiculous. I love that offense. I think it is the best designed offense in football. And if you look at the two situations, it's very different, right? You know, McVay takes over a team with a lot of defensive talent, and he hires Wade Phillips to coordinate that defense. The Niners don't have nearly as much talent on that side of the ball. They do not have maybe the most storied defensive play caller in NFL history overseeing that unit, and they've been ravaged by injuries. Anyone who thinks that Kyle Shanahan is not an accomplished, capable coach in the NFL, I don't know what to tell you.
Robert Mays, our guest here on 95.7 The Game. That being said, there's a belief that this is a huge year for Kyle Shanahan, and obviously the 49ers are going to have to win a lot more than they have, whether that's playoffs or compete with the Rams for the division. I mean, that remains to be seen, but there's a belief this team needs to be in the race in December. What do you think the chances of that happening are, given the talent on this team and Shanahan's ability to get the most out of it?
I think they'll bounce back. I don't know to what degree they'll bounce back, but they definitely were not as bad as their record indicated last year. You know, the averages would say that they'll be healthier this season. I think they'll be better with Garoppolo on offense. I like a lot of the weapons that they have. I agree with you that the outside world is probably looking at that spot and saying they have to have some urgency. But I also think that we should have a little bit more patience with Shanahan than with John Lynch, just because I feel like the players that they've picked in a lot of ways have not come to fruition. I mean, whether that be Solomon Thomas, some of the free agent signings they've splurged on that haven't necessarily worked out. I know that Shanahan has a voice there, but he's the coach. He's the coach first. And if Kyle Shanahan does, for some reason, get fired this offseason because the Niners have a disappointing year, there will be 10 teams lined up at his door for them, him to call offensive plays for them.
Yeah, and that's one of the interesting dynamics, I think, in play this season is there's going to start to be that discussion of who wanted who. You know, if Garoppolo struggles, is that going to fall on John Lynch as being the guy that said, hey, we got a good value on this guy, getting him from the Patriots, where maybe it's borne out that Shanahan wanted to wait for Kirk Cousins or Shanahan wanted to draft somebody else when they take Solomon Thomas? I think those are all of the interesting storylines if there isn't some early success that you may start to see leak out.
Absolutely, and I feel like if you're looking at the offensive moves they've made, especially at free agency, even Jalen Hurd is kind of in this mold where it doesn't seem like a player they need necessarily. They really were aggressive in going to get him when you consider what the rest of the roster looks like. And you think about just how much they've exploded the market when it comes to specific players on offense. You know, Jerick McKinnon's deal was nowhere near what people thought it was going to be. Kyle Juszczyk is making three times as much as any other fullback in the league. And even if Kyle Shanahan does have some input into the players, you need a checks and balances system. You need a guy that in the front office to say no, because that's how this stuff works. You want input, but you also have to have somebody that makes the final decision. So even if Kyle Shanahan has been the one picking the players to some degree in some capacities, I feel like that's why you're supposed to have a general manager that understands where the line in the sand is supposed to exist.
Robert, don't you think it's virtually impossible in this day and age to succeed if you're going to try to do both roles, you know, do the shopping and the cooking, so to speak?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it seems like they're both 80 to 100 hour a week jobs.
I think that you have certain coaches who've done a really good job of kind of streamlining their process. And I think that, I mean, if you look at what Sean Payton has done, he has a huge personnel say in New Orleans. That is his team. And he's done an incredible job drafting. But I do think the degree of difficulty is extremely high. Even a guy like Bill Belichick, who eventually is the person that has the final say in New England, he's always had someone like Scott Pioli, someone like Nick Caserio, who is really the person kind of overseeing it day-to-day before Belichick makes the final notion. So it's similar to having a good coaching staff if you're a really good offensive head coach that also calls plays. If you ask any of those guys, you need people around you to synthesize the information correctly and bring you something that's pared down to the point where your job is a lot easier. So I think if you have that kind of staff, it's possible, but I also think that, again, the degree of difficulty is so, so high. The needle you need to thread is really, really tight.
Robert, who will be the leading rusher for the 49ers in 2019, and who will be the leading pass catcher for the 49ers, not named George Kittle, in 2019?
I would bet on Tevin Coleman just because I think that he's the most talented of that group, and he just has that familiarity with Shanahan. If I was putting money on it, that's who I would say. When it comes to the pass catchers, it's so interesting. I'm a big Dante Pettis guy. I just think he's really talented. He's the type of receiver that I like, just a person who understands leverage and space and how to get open, even if he's a little bit limited athletically. I am taking the Kyle Shanahan calling him out thing as more of a motivational ploy than it is an actual question of where he fits in the hierarchy, but who knows? If I had to bet on somebody, I'd say him, but man, it's hard to ignore how good Jalen Hurd has looked in the preseason. That guy is talented, and when you consider how certain guys underperform in college and how they get underdrafted, it's often a matter of situation, and I think you could argue that with the way he kind of bounced around everything else, that he's a guy that has so much pure ability that he'd really be able to do something in the right system.
The Niners did a lot to address their defensive shortcomings in the offseason. A lot of the guys that they brought in have a little bit of an injury history. Let's assume that these guys get healthy and the health gods smile upon them. How dramatically improved do you think this defense can be from last year?
I think it can be very improved just because I think that a pass rush solves a lot of woes. I think that if Nick Bosa is what he's advertised to be and Dee Ford can do even something close to what he did last season, that really transforms what your unit looks like. As far as what it looks like on the back end, I just think it's so hard to bet on Jason Verrett being healthy at this point. I would love to see him out there. When he was really clicking in San Diego, he was one of the most fun defensive players in the league to watch. But I think right now there's a reason that you can get him for next to nothing because you just can't count on him being on the field. And I think when you consider that side of it, it's really tough, man, because that secondary just gives me nightmares. It would keep me up at night if I were a Niners fan, thinking about what that secondary is going to look like. Even if you speed up the process by having a much better pass rush, I still think it's going to be really difficult for them to stop people from scoring if that's the personnel that they're lining up in the back seven.
Robert, final question for you. Give us a range on the Niners. Give us a three-win range of floor to ceiling for this team.
I can't even do that because I think it's so much bigger than that. I mean, I could absolutely see them going 11-5, but I could also see them going 5-11.
Okay, all right.
I mean, I think that of any team in the league, they have maybe the widest range of outcomes this season. I think for the most part, you can pin that down for a lot of different franchises, but for them, it's really difficult for me. I tend to be in the more optimistic side of things because I am a Kyle Shanahan evangelist. I feel like I was the person who built the church in 2016 when he was in Atlanta. So I would like to see him succeed. Again, I think that he's an unbelievably talented offensive coach, and I would bet on that before I bet on anything. You know, there's a reason that this McVay thing is happening, and the reason for that is that the way to sustain success in the NFL is to build an offense that can be consistent from year to year and can really operate and score points based on the infrastructure alone. And I think that's what we've seen in New Orleans. That's what we've seen in Kansas City. You know, guys in that mold, that's the way that you can consistently be great. You can even say the same for Josh McDaniels in New England. So I think that I would bet on that being the way to do this. And if that's the way to do it, I don't mind Kyle Shanahan being the one overseeing that.
Robert, great stuff. We really appreciate the time. Thanks a lot for joining us. We'll have to talk to you again soon here once the season gets kicked off.
Sound good, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Robert.
Really good stuff there from Robert Mays.
No doubt.
And, wow, I mean, yeah, it is hard to put the 49ers in a range of three, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I went six, somewhere between 6 and 10 and 10 and 6. And you know, if you have to pin it to couple here, you know, maybe 7-9 if I had to tamp that down a little bit more. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station, but the greatest range, he thinks, of any team.
Yeah, he said Wouldn't be surprised by 11-5 or 5-11.
It's another sharp national guy that is high on the Niners.
Right. Everybody is for some reason. Is that runoff still of Shanahan's time in Atlanta? Like his ability of a play call. The pundits love Shanahan. I mean, this guy said he practically built the church. Everybody is waiting for Shanahan to be basically McVay's rival for the next decade.
I love him as a head coach. I love him as a play caller.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's a good head coach.
Right. He's already proven he's a good play caller.
He's a terrific play caller. Yep. He's a terrific offensive coordinator, offensive mind. All of those things are true. I don't think we know if he's a good head coach or not.
Right.
Can his team play buttoned-up football, complimentary football, mistake-free football? I don't know. I don't think we know the answer to that. Or is he just a sharp guy that can draw up a play and knows what play to call?
Well, and I asked you earlier what about the relationship between Kyle and his players. I have yet to hear anybody say anything bad about him, but I'll be curious if the thing is, if they struggle this year, there's only going to be repercussions if they struggle and they're healthy. Because if they have another injury-ravaged year, then I don't know what to make of Kyle Shanahan. You know, because there's...
Well, some point, though, if you change your training staff and your doctors and the like...
They've done that, like, every year.
Well, no, but if you do that and it still doesn't change...
Right.
Does that make you more or less apt to hold somebody accountable for it? I don't know. The injury one's tricky.
Yeah, I don't think Shanahan has to worry about a hot seat until year four. I've felt that since I looked at it as a 4-year deal, and if you're where we hope you are at 4 years, then you get to stay the other two, and then we'll talk about that later.
I think if they win four or five games again, I think he's in big trouble.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think if they win 6 games, I think he's on the hot seat going into next year, but that's in the range of what you're talking about.
What if they
win 3-4 games, I think he's out. Because I think
if they're dinged up, I think it'll look
so bad. It can't get worse for him, or he's got problems.
Right, right.
That's my point.
Boy,
I don't think that's going to happen. I think he will be. I believe Kyle Shanahan will be the head coach of the 49ers in 2020.
But if they win four games again.
You gotta project.
I think he survives that.
Yeah, I don't.
No?
I think it would be hard because of how bad it would have to look for that to happen.
Yeah.
And if that happens, there will be plenty of reasons why.
If they stink this year too, it's going to be like, oh God, did we make a mistake with Jimmy? Is this going to be another 5-year plan? You know, if Shanahan loses his job after 3 seasons of a 6-year deal, how are they going to get a legitimate head coach in? They'll have to overpay and give a ton of years, and it's all going to have to be guaranteed.
Well, I think you just touched on the reason why Kyle Shanahan probably gets year 4 regardless. And it's the fact that if there's one thing Jed York doesn't want more than anything, it's to have to hire another coach.
Exactly. Yeah, he's looked about as bad as he can look with every one of his coaching hires. He's really hoping Shanahan works out
for a variety of reasons. You nailed it. He doesn't want to go through that again.
No. I mean, like I said, I think him giving them a 6-year deal is as close as we'll ever get to Jed York saying.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.